An estimated 15% of stalking cases worldwide result in homicide, and most complaints of stalking in New Zealand relate to domestic or custody matters. But stalking and cyberstalking are currently not defined by the Crimes Act in New Zealand as an offence. Instead, it comes under harassment. Darren Morton is a security expert specialising in stalking resolutions and protection, and he says the law is not sufficient to deal with the torment and hurt that stalking causes. He's been a detective and worked for the CIB and been a member of various special tactics groups. Darren says stalking is much more serious than merely being a nuisance. He helps many people who know they're being stalked but don't know how to make it stop. Welcome, Darren.
Hi, Karen. How are you?
Good, thank you. Is there a definition for stalking?
Yeah. Stalking comes under the, as I think you mentioned before, comes under the Harassment Act. And effectively, stalking is just the persistent and unwanted following of another person.
I see in the dictionary it says when you're illegally following and watching someone, especially a woman, over a period of time. But does it happen equally to men and women?
Not quite equally, but both men and women are stalked. So on average, you're looking at about 1 in every 4 to 7 women are stalked. And again, on average, 1 in every approximately 6 to 13 males.
Those are high percentages.
Yeah, they are. And it's a very hard crime or set of behaviours for a victim to deal with because it's so unknown. You know, a lot of it happens, nobody reports it, but it has such a detrimental effect on the victim.
Someone can be literally shadowing you, basically. They're like perhaps a peeping Tom that's a little distant from you in terms of knowing you, or someone, this is most common too, romantically obsessed with you, who you may or may not have had a relationship with and they just can't let it go. Do you get that often?
Yeah, so and as you mentioned before, in New Zealand, it's mainly the domestic-related stalking that we experience or the victims experience in New Zealand. And that's where you've had one partner move away from the other partner. But the other partner, and generally it's a male, not always, but generally it's the male, is not able to let go. So they still feel that they have to impose or maintain some level of control over the victim. So that's when the stalking kicks in and they tend to monitor their ex-partner, their movements, who they're now in a relationship with. And in general, it's the domestic-related stalkings that quite often lead to serious assaults and, unfortunately, homicides.
So some of the behaviours would be ringing all the time, texting all the time, maybe giving people presents.
Yeah, and that's one of the stalker types, is the intimacy seeker, who is effectively, they honestly believe that that there is a relationship that exists between them and the victim, and their aim is basically to establish that relationship and make the victim aware that actually the two of them are in love. And that's where you get things such as presents and unwanted attention where the offender is trying to actually build a relationship.
What did you call that stalker? What's the...
Well, that's the intimacy seeker.
Now, intimacy seeker, right.
In general, there's about 6 different types of stalkers. And if you look all around the world, each one will have a different sort of handle or title, but effectively they all come under the 6 same types of stalking behaviours.
Do you know what they are off the top of your head, those 6?
Yeah, so first one, you've got the resentful stalker, and that's someone who has been humiliated or treated unfairly, or they feel that they've been treated unfairly by the victim. So that's a resentful stalker, the predatory stalker. This is where you're dealing with somebody that you won't know. Generally, a stalker will know who you are or you will know them at some level. Unfortunately, the predatory stalker, who is the hardest to actually track down, is somebody who you may have even just sat next to on the bus, passed by in a cafe, And for whatever reason, that individual has taken an interest in the victim. We've covered off the intimacy seeker, so that's where the individual feels that they have a relationship with the victim. You have the incompetent suitor, who's someone who's been rejected by the victim when they've tried to actually establish a relationship. And then you have basically your homegrown, I suppose, for want of another phrase, domestic stalker, who is where the vast majority of New Zealand stalking falls into, and that's an ex-partner who, again, just wants to maintain control or a level of fear over the victim.
It's very frightening. It's really frightening for the victim, and victims can find themselves in quite dangerous situations, and like you mentioned, it can end in homicide.
Yeah, no, look, definitely. I mean, stalking, once a victim knows they are being stalked, it encompasses their whole life. The vast majority of victims will not be able to return to work. I believe from memory the longest lasting case of stalking occurred for 43 years, whereas the average length of stalking, again, when I'm talking statistics, I'm talking overseas statistics because New Zealand, we have no statistics on stalking. But the average episodes last between 6 months and 2 years.
So in your job, what do you do? When it's resolution, well, I know protection, what that means, but resolutions, do you bring these parties together?
Oh, no, definitely not. I mean, we teach the individuals how to gain control of their life again.
The victim.
The victim, how they can gain control of their life and how they can manage the situation. Because there are right and wrong ways of dealing with things. Now, having said that, when you're dealing with a stalker, you're dealing with someone who has a psychological issue of some description. They all have mental health issues, or the vast majority do.
Really? All of them, you'd say, have mental health issues?
The vast majority do, yes. And the problem is you're trying to resolve a situation with somebody who has a varying degree of reasoning. You know, some of the worst cases are where if I can't have you, nobody else will. But the worst thing about stalking is it encompasses the whole of the victim's life. So the first thing that we do when we are approached by somebody, we have to sit down with them. We have to let them know that they're not crazy. That's the first thing. Because every single person who's approached us has said, I don't know if it's me. I think I'm going crazy. I can't sleep at night. I can't function. So what we have to do is get them back onto a level playing field, so to speak, and then we run through some techniques that we encourage them to do that both changes the way that they live their life, particularly if it's domestic related, because if it's an ex-partner, the ex-partner will know who their friends are, where they go, what they like, if they leave the back door unlocked, all these sorts of things. So we need to get them to gain control of their life, and we give them a set of procedures or processes that they can do to achieve that. And then we take them through how they can best document what is happening to them. Because the problem with stalking is, as every victim that's come to us has said, I go to the police think I'm nuts. And as an ex-police officer, I get that. Because a lot of stalking behaviours, unless they are documented, and the police need facts, they need documentation. If they are to prove anything and get a successful prosecution in court, they need the facts. And unfortunately, a lot of the victims don't keep things like diaries. They don't obtain photos of the offender following them. You know, they're not altering their routines. They're not discussing their concerns with a close family friend or relative because, again, they just think everybody will think I'm nuts. So a lot of the victims tend to keep a lot of it inside and try and deal with it themselves.
Gee, just scratch the surface of it all here, Darren. It's such a big issue, isn't it? So thank you for just, you know, opening up that Pandora's box for us. Protection order is the best first remedy, though?
Look, protection orders are a court document. They give the victim a sense of confidence. But at the end of the day, a protection order is not going to stop somebody bashing down your front door, as a lot of these victims know. A protection order is not going to stop somebody from stabbing you. And we discuss this with our victims. And, you know, there are times when we say, yeah, look, a protection order won't hurt. There are other times when we'll go, don't get a protection order. And the reason for that being is based on the offender's, especially if it's an ex-partner who they know, mental state. So we don't want to do anything that's going to push that individual over the edge or to do something that they might not have perhaps thought about at this stage. So for us, it's about putting a plan in place to help our victims keep themselves safe while they work through the process of accumulating evidence to be able to present to the police in a calm, rational and realistic manner.
Darren, thank you very much.
Pleasure.
That's security expert Darren Morton. And you can hear more about domestic abuse issues in the second season of Breaking Silence, a powerful 8-part series launched today on rnz.co.nz.